The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
In Destroyer number 117, Deadly Genes, there are unpredictable consequences when scientists become their own science projects.
Shut up!
There are two of them. Two BCWs. I mean, two. In there. Dr. White, this probably isn't a good idea.
Of course it is. Have you eaten yet?
What? Yes. Yes, I have.
It's been a few hours for me. I'm hungry again.
We can get something after?
Maybe a little something. Tied me over.
And when a feeding frenzy ensues among genetically warped predators, and the hunters become the hunted, can Remo and Chun manage to stay on top of the food chain?
You're fast. You were supposed to lead him over to me. He moved too fast. Yeah. What's so funny?
You, Snagglepuss. You're already dead, and you don't even know it.
He's bluffing.
Twine me, putty tats.
You are in league with the fiend.
I am now. I just met Dr. White. Nice woman. Not much like her taste in beverages. But I think I found a chew toy to cleanse my palate.
When life-saving research has death-dealing results, and helpless lambs seem to become bloodthirsty lions, who do Remo and Chun protect, and who must they kill? Find out what happens when petri dishes roar in Destroyer number 117, Deadly Genes. Now available on Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Captain Serrano, Sweet Delight.
Station Tug 34, permission to grapple.
Permission to grapple.
All fast, on your signal.
Captain Serrano of Sweet Delight, permission to undock on your signal.
All clear on station. Confirm all clear aboard.
All clear aboard.
Graphic Audio presents The Serrano Legacy by Elizabeth Moon. Book 3, Winning Colors, Part 1. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Tess Rowan, Michael John Casey, Terrence Aselford, Sonny Lasky, M.B. Van Dorn, Michael Glenn, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Penny, Peter Stray, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Demery, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, and Mort Shelby.
Otala sat on a hard bench, elbow to elbow with the rest of Cell 571, munching the supper, processed protein extruded into pseudo-sausages nested in pickled neo-cabbage that preceded the evening's entertainment. Or so she called it. She was aware that her fellow conspirators considered it more important than anything else in their lives. Her friends would not have recognized her. Her normally bronze skin had the pallor associated with the underbellies of cave-dwelling amphibians. Her dark eyes were masked with blue contact lenses, which also gave her red-rimmed lids, the better to fit in with the locals. She wore the same dark, ill-cut coveralls and had the same fingertip calluses as the others. She had held a real job on the assembly line, with faked papers, which wasn't that unusual, for the past 2 months. It was all a great adventure. She now knew things about her family's company that she had never imagined. She would have incomparable tales to tell when she went back topside. Meanwhile, she could eat sour pseudo-sausage, drink cheap wine, use words her parents didn't even know, and find out for herself if the reputation of Finvardian men was deserved. So far, she wasn't sure. Einar had ranked only average on her personal scale, but if Sikar would only look at her. Otala had come to think that conspirators came in two basic flavors. The bland vanillas, usually wealthy, met in comfortably appointed boardrooms or dining rooms, scenting the air with expensive perfumes, liqueurs, and good food. The more complex chocolates, usually impoverished, met in dingy back rooms of failing businesses or scruffy warehouses, where the musty air stank of dangerous chemicals and unwashed bodies, just like the room she inhabited now. The vanillas, when they cursed, did so with a sense of risk. The chocolates cursed without noticing, the familiar phrases embedded in their speech like nuts in candy. The vanillas claimed to loathe violence, resorting to it with reluctance. The chocolates embraced violence and its tools as familiar and comforting rituals. No wonder, since when the vanillas chose violence, they employed chocolates to carry it out. Otala much preferred luxury herself. She considered that a long, leisurely soak in perfumed water was the only civilized way to begin the day. She, too, felt the little shock of surprise when she heard the expletives come out of her own mouth with no immediate punishment. Her skin preferred the sensuous touch of silk. Her taste buds rejoiced during elaborate dinners created by talented cooks. But she could not confine her sensuality to the bland end of the spectrum. Vanilla was not enough. In her own mind, she considered her taste for chocolate an expression of unusual sensitivity. She finished her supper, as the others finished theirs. Odd how the same custom held at tables high and low. Everyone tried to finish at the same time. Across the room, Sikar stood. He was the contact from higher up, the man whose respect they all wanted. Even in the baggy, dark clothing, he had presence. Otala couldn't analyze it. She only knew that she felt his intensity as a pressure under her ribcage. She wanted that pressure elsewhere. As usual, Sikar began speaking without preamble.
We the young serve the old, and the old can live forever now, and they expect us to serve forever. We will grow old and die, but they will not. Is this right? No! It was bad before, when the old rich first set their hands against the gate of death. But 150 years is not forever. That is why our fathers and grandfathers submitted. They hoped to afford that process for themselves, and it was limited. But now...
They live forever, and we work forever, and our children...
Forever! Their children will live forever, too. Our children will die forever! But there is a chance! Now, while the government is shaken by the king's departure...
They had discussed this night after night, what it meant that the king had resigned. Would it help the cause or hurt it? Rejuvenance littered both sides of the political scene. Almost everyone rich and powerful enough to be a force in the government had been rejuvenated at least once. Apparently, the hierarchy had decided it was a good thing, and now they could act. Otala pulled her mind back from its contemplation of the aesthetics of Sikar's striking coloring. Those fire-blue eyes, the pale skin, the black hair with the silver streak, to listen to his speech.
But before we act, We must purify ourselves. We must not allow any taint of the rejuvenant to corrupt our purpose. Are you sure? Sure that none among you harbors a sneaking sympathy with those old leeches?
Otala's parents weren't old leeches. They were merely idiots. When she had to say these things, she always thought of people she didn't like.
Are you sure? Because I am not. In other cells, we found those pretending to be with us and secretly spying on us for the rejuvenants.
Secretly spying was exactly the kind of rhetoric that Otala enjoyed. She curled her tongue around it in her mouth, not realizing until Sikar stood in front of her table what he was leading up to. The tool in his hands, though, clenched the breath in her chest. Otala recognized it. Everyone did, who had ever changed fertility implants. It would locate even unexpired implants and could be used to remove them. But no one here had implants, except her.
Put out your arms, brothers and sisters! For this is how we found the traitors before. They had implants.
Otala couldn't move. She wanted to jump and run. She wanted to scream, "You don't understand!" And she knew that wouldn't work. Sikar smiled directly into her eyes, just as she'd wanted since she'd first seen him. Even though she knew she could not really feel anything, she was sure her implant itched. The skin above it fluoresced, a brilliant blue.
Maybe she was a manager's favorite!
Maybe she's an owner's daughter. We'll see.
He pressed the tool to her arm. She had no doubt of the next sensation. No anesthetic spray, no numbing at all. The tool's logic ignored her pain and sliced into her arm. Her arm throbbed. She was surprised that she hadn't screamed, but she was still too scared. Those holding her tightened their grips. Sikar held up the implant.
You see? And this tool will tell us whose it is!
She had forgotten that, if she'd ever known. Implants carried the original prescription codes. That had something to do with proving malpractice. Sikar touched the implant to a flat plate on the tool's side.
As we suspected, this is a rejuvenant. Child of rejuvenants, our mortal enemies. This is one who would enslave our children to her pleasure for all time!
No.
Shut up! This isn't a game, rich girl.
Before she died, Otala wanted to revise her earlier opinion and say that some conspirators tasted of neither vanilla nor chocolate, but of blood. But she could not speak, and no one would have listened if she had.